Welcome in to Off The Brawl MMA on offtheball.com. 25 years of UFC in the books after last night's UFC Denver card. I am Niall McGrath. On the show today, we have a big, big lineup. And as always, my partner in crime, Mr. Miserable, Simon Maguire. Simon, how are you? Good weekends?
Yeah, I've been great, yeah. Thanks, Niall. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, no problem. Yes. Simon, obviously a big weekend of mixed martial arts in the books just gone by with UFC Denver. Fantastic main event last night between Chan Sung, the Korean Zombie, and obviously Yair Rodriguez. We'll be talking about that in a few minutes' time. We'll also be talking about the UFC flyweight situation. It looks like it's going to be dissolved, the division, which is very unfortunate. There is rumours of Henry Cejudo versus TJ Dillashaw as well. A fight, you know, I'd love to see, but strangely enough, the rumours are and the reports are that it's going to be a flyweight, and Shorty Torres has actually confirmed his release from the UFC, one of the best up-and-coming flights in the world. So it's going to be very interesting to see that way that pans out. Also on the show, big stacked guest, full of lineup of guests as well, should I say. We have the Magic Man, Don Madge, who made his UFC debut a couple of weeks ago against T. Edwards at Moncton. Phenomenal performance there. He'll be talking about that debut and his mixed martial arts career. And also, dropping absolute bombs later on, the man from Florida, down there in ATT, Mr. Colby Covington, literally calls out half the division. So looking forward to sharing that one with you guys a little while's time. We'll also be looking ahead to UFC Argentina next weekend. Neil Magny versus Santiago Ponzinibbio. Jeez, I got that one right, Simon. And Ricardo Lamas versus Darren Elkins. Simon.
Yes.
What a night for the UFC last night. That main event for me, just pretty fitting on the 25th anniversary. That is actually going to be tomorrow. The 12th will be the official anniversary. But what an anniversary card and what a finish. You couldn't have written the script any better, mate. It was unbelievable, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And like when you look at the card, it just looked like a normal UFC fight night card. And then there was knockouts, there was submissions, there was the fight of the night, knockout of the year from Yair Rodriguez out of nowhere. And the card really couldn't have gone any better in terms of this is a celebration of 25 years of the UFC. Cowboy Cerrone then wins most wins in the UFC and then most finishes in the
UFC. It was sort of like something I came to earlier on. It was a lot of guys at the top of that card that people may have written off in their career. And they've sort of bounced back and they've gave the two fingers up to a lot of people in terms in relation of their performances. Donald Cowboy Cerrone being one, obviously coming off that tail loss. And Yair Rodriguez against, you know, Frankie Edgar. They've put themselves right back in the mix in those divisions there now after those wins last night.
Yeah, I think it was a huge win for Cerrone. I would be one of those people who would have written him off in terms of it looked like maybe his chin had gone and maybe the hunger wasn't there anymore. And then he pulled that one out of the bag last night and he's dropping back down to lightweight now. I think he was too small for...
Yeah, it's a good move, isn't it?
Welter. I think it is, yeah. He's very shredded. When he drops down to lightweight, he's very shredded. He's very... You know, he had that run, what was it, 8 in a row to get to the title and then lost out. And he said in the post-fight interviews last night that he wants to put another run together and get another shot at that belt, which I think is fantastic.
You know, I think it's very interesting that he said that. And, you know, the post-fight interview as well, he came out and said, had a little jibe with, you know, his former training partner who were obviously in Mark Perry's corner and, you know, Mike Winklejohn. And he said, 15 fights, I haven't had a game plan. I've gone in with a game plan here with my new training partners. And he said it's paid dividend. A very, very calm and cool and relaxed looking Donald Cerrone for me as well. I thought he's never actually looked that calm coming out. He's a guy who's admittedly suffered with anxiety before he's come out into the octagon before. And I think that's been a big issue with him. I think he's got his mental side correct now. We could actually see a Donald Cerrone down at 155, where he's obviously way more suited. His body weight is way more... you know, it translates a lot better at 155 pounds than it does 170. Like Darren Till was, you know, 10 times bigger than him. So for me, it's an excellent move. And I'm actually quite excited to see Donald Cowboy Cerrone with that frame of mind at that weight class to make a push and make a challenge. And a fight that's been sort of knocking around after the performance last night was a potential fight with Conor McGregor at 155 pounds. Would that make sense for the UFC to do something like that in terms of numbers?
No.
Or Conor McGregor?
I don't think so, no. I know, not to kill the buzz. Yeah, I'm delighted for Cowboy as well. I think you can see he celebrated with his son in the octagon afterwards, and I think that's given him a totally different perspective. Even afterwards, he was talking about the bust up he had about the money or whatever. They fell out about money, and he said it was unfortunate, and he kind of took another shot saying, well, he's not getting paid tonight either.
Yeah.
In terms of his fight, like he said afterwards, it's something very exciting, and you'll kind of go, I had a quick look at the rankings there. I think Justin Gaethje could be the fight.
You think so?
Yeah, because, well, just in terms of who's it going to be, I mean, Lee and Iaquinta are tied up.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys tied up.
Even Conor are still suspended, as far as I know.
Yeah, that's true.
And Nate Diaz and Poirier will probably be matched again. I can't see that one, I can't see them breaking up that fight. And then there's only Tony Ferguson, maybe. So Ferguson or Gaethje, I don't think you could chuck him in straight away, because he had lost, I think it was 3 of his last 4. Yeah. So I don't think you can go give him a top contender fight straight away.
I'll tell you why I like the Conor fight, because I think it's a big enough name maybe to draw Conor back. There's a little bit of beef from press conferences there. The UFC sell it alone on that. I think they're more right to do a Donald Cerrone fight, possibly, than a Tony Ferguson fight, because we know, I think, the way Conor sort of feels about Tony, that he's not a big enough draw in order to make enough money ultimately for Mr. McGregor's pockets. But
yeah,
you know, it's a fight I'd love to see, and we can talk about the records as well that Donald broke last night. You know, most victories, submissions, all this malarkey. I don't even know 100% what the records are, but
he got most finishes in UFC history with 15. He overtook Anderson Silva, and then most wins 21. He took over Michael Bisping.
Incredible. Yeah. Absolutely incredible. If you look at Donald Cerrone's career, you know, he came into the UFC after WEC as well. A real, real good sort of feeling story I got from that last night. It was pretty crazy the way the card was done. On Mike Perry, I want to have a word about him before we move on. Very, very raw for me still. He goes out there, possibly, you know, polar opposite to Donald Cerrone. He goes out there with too much aggression, and I think it doesn't work in his favour. There's an awful lot of rawness and maybe a lack of thought in a lot of the things in which he's doing. I think we saw that last night.
Well, lack of thought, you know, even Cerrone said afterwards, when he had the armbar locked in, if Perry had rolled the other way, he would have rolled out of it. He actually rolled back into it.
Exactly.
So maybe that kind of backs up what you're saying about him not thinking as he goes. Where he goes next? Well, I mean, he has a broken arm now.
Yeah. So Donald said he heard a pop.
Yeah, and well, Perry tweeted afterwards that it's broken. So
he said it was like pulling a chicken wing, and he was taking it home on him. That were Donald Cerrone's exact words last night in the post-fight interview. I think we can just obviously park Mike Perry for the moment with that injury, but very interested to see what happens with Donald Cerrone next. You know, I wouldn't rule out that McGregor fighting is a very, very good idea for both guys. And as well, you have to take into consideration Conor McGregor's very poor performance against Khabib Nurmagomedov as well. It might be something that the UFC might look at in the next number of weeks. Main event, could you have written that finish any better? It was absolutely insane. An elbow, you know, originally looking at it last night, 4 or 5 a.m., whatever time it was, I thought it was a clash of heads. I think Paul Felder Brendan Fitzgerald on the commentary thought the same as well. But if you obviously have a look at the other replays, absolutely phenomenal stuff from Yara Rodriguez, able to land that from that position with 1 second to go on the clock.
Yeah.
I had Chang Jung-sung, the Korean Zombie, winning the fight up until that point. And I think it was the only way Yair, for me, was winning the fight, was getting that finish. And he got it 1 second to do. Phenomenal, phenomenal stuff from Yair Rodriguez. And again, like Donald Cerrone, it's this guy that's risen again from the ashes.
Well, just to go back to the fight itself, it was a superb fight.
War.
It was the two, you know, take a bow, as they say. It was absolutely fantastic.
Take a bow, son.
I had the, say that last shot didn't land and I went to the judges. I had Zombie winning 3-2.
Yeah.
Won the first 3 rounds.
4-1 for me.
Yeah, well, fair enough. But if he got up after the clash and was able to walk, it would have been a 10-8 round. He would have drawn the fight. But to pull that out of the back, like, Rodriguez wasn't within that fight until that happened. That was,
you can't really put into words.
You can't. The only, and the way he was just left slumped there on the canvas, it reminded me of Juan Manuel Marquez knocking out Manny Pacquiao when, you know, Pacquiao came flying in and Marquez hit him.
Yeah.
Used his own force and the force of the thing. Same thing happened last night. It looked like the Zombie fell into it. And it was just the perfect angle. It's just, I can't even.
You can just, if you look at it back, you can just see that he dips, looks, and shoots and throws. And to catch him as clean as he did, and it's been a thing that Yair has done. If you look at even last night's fight, he threw an awful lot of spinning shit. And a lot of it doesn't land for Yair.
No, it didn't. Yes.
But I think, you know, going forward, I'd like to see him be a little bit more cerebral and a little bit more cautious in what he does.
No,
because a guy like Brian Ortega, he spins around, he's going to pick him, put him on his backside, and he's going to tap him out. That's going to be the problem for Yair Rodriguez. But listen, in terms of the fight last night, maybe he's gone in and gone, you know, I can be a bit more open with a guy like the Korean Zombie.
Possibly,
and
yeah.
Certainly he was like that. I think it's great to have him back. And listen, for the Korean Zombie, I don't think he's even a loser in that fight last night. Everyone loves seeing him fight. You know, obviously he's a bit of a rarity with, you know, he had to do the military service for a couple of years. I think we've only seen him fight twice in like 4 years.
Yeah.
But he's a gem I think we need to cherish in the world of mixed martial arts. He's a guy that if he can get three or four fights again, consecutive run of fluidity in the octagon, he's a guy that's going to be able to challenge for that title. And I really don't doubt that. You know, and I think Yair is obviously the same if he can just, you know, close up a hole or two in his game.
Well, I think, yeah, Yair will move on from this one, but that's a rematch down the line.
Definitely.
That fight just has to happen again. That was just too good not to.
Definitely, 100%.
You know, it'll be criminal for that fight not to happen again.
Yeah,
it was absolutely brilliant. And the thing about Rodriguez, to pull that move off after 24 minutes and 58 seconds of an absolute war. And
2 weeks' notice.
And to still think of it going, like how, it's not often you're kind of struggling for words.
Flabbergasted, I think I used, was the word I used this morning on Twitter.
Yes.
It's a good word to use to describe that, but...
Did you spell it right?
I think I did. Okay. Flabbergasted, yeah. Whatever, yeah. But yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And in terms of what we're looking at going forward, there's so many fights to make for either of these guys. And like, you know, we had the Frankie Edgar fight with Yair Rodriguez. Maybe it's a little bit more of a slower progression. He's 26 years of age, so people tend to forget that he's been around a long time. And good to see he's in the right frame of mind. And he mentioned that afterwards, why he took that prolonged period of time out. He was released by the UFC at one point. And I think it's great to see a guy maybe having a few mental issues. He didn't exactly allude to that, but he said, you know, I need to be happy with myself. That's the most important thing in his life. So he's obviously addressed these issues. And it's great to see him take that little bit of time out and bounce back again now, next year, and make a run for it.
Possibly. I mean, you also have to remember, like, he was losing that fight. He was second to the punch more often.
Well, a lot of people actually, you know, thought Chang Jung Sung was winning the fight as well. It's going to be an interesting one to see his score, because...
That's what I said, the Zombies was winning the fight. No, what I mean is, we're talking about how Yair...
Yair was winning the fight. Sorry, a few people had it for Yair.
Don't know about that.
Yeah, it was interesting. I didn't, but yeah.
I certainly didn't. I mean, before one would, or three-two, you know... Yeah. Barred it, the late knockout. So at the same time, you know, technically he lost the fight, but he didn't. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
he didn't.
Exactly.
So, I don't like it's it, run it back.
We can't even rematch, but I wouldn't be complaining to put it on either. Do you know what I mean? Unbelievable fight. Massively looking forward to seeing both those guys get back in there. I think it was really fitting as well to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Ultimate Fighting Championships. Phenomenal stuff. Honourable mentions as well.
Yeah, just a shout out there. I thought you wanted to move on. A shout out there to Devante Smith for a ruthless KO win.
Over Julian Arosa, yeah. Paddy Pimblett's former opponent at Cage Warriors Unplugged, I think it was the same night as UFC 205 in New York City when Conor McGregor beat Eddie Alvarez. That was a phenomenal finish from Devante Smith, a product of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series.
Well, it just helps to show that these things aren't just a joke, that, you know, they're churning out, you know, the reality shows are churning out genuine contenders and sometimes champions, if you look at, you know, like,
well, I think it's the way forward ahead of the Ultimate Fighter.
Whittaker and Gastelum in particular will be the two standouts, you know, from this era now of ultra competitive
from the Ultimate Fighter
MMA, you know. But yeah, what a straight right down the pipe, and just made sure on the ground then. But yeah, it was unbelievable.
I think the refereeing, you know, for me last night, there was a number of fights where the stoppages were late. Then we had the whole incident, in what fight was it? I'm getting confused now. Here, don't the card up in front of me. It was the Chaz Skelly fight. It was just absolutely crazy. Bobby Moffat and Chaz Skelly, the whole, you know, instant replay thing. He wasn't out. The referee stopped it ridiculously. They used replay, still didn't have it overturned. And, you know, I think that's something they need to address as well. It's a bit messy. I don't think the referee should be looking back at his own decisions. They should have maybe... you know, someone made the suggestion that another referee looking at the instant replay making the decision for the referee, but
TMO
that was
kind of
TMO kind of thing. And Sean Sheehan actually made that point earlier today. I totally agree with it. Wins for Beniel Darush over Thiago Moises as well. Really, really good performance there. Dominant win for Beniel Darush, another guy who, you know, I just want to see a little bit more from Beniel. I think he can kick on into that upper echelon of that lightweight division in the coming months and years. And Jermaine Deramandami, former UFC featherweight champion, defeated Raquel Pennington. A really sloppy performance from Raquel Pennington. Not a great fight, in my opinion. And I think, you know, it's a hangover as well, again, from that world title fight. She missed weight on Friday as well. It's hard for these guys sometimes to get back up after a world title fight. We see it time and time again, guys losing after they have a world title fight. It's just something missing there at Raquel at the moment, and it just wasn't a good performance. A dominant win for Jermaine de Randamie. Okay, let's get to it. Let's get to the first interview of the day. I had a really good conversation with Don Madge, who had a phenomenal debut at UFC Moncton just 2 weeks ago against Tay Edwards. A fantastic knockout performance. I spoke with Don earlier this evening, so here's the interview. We'll be back to talk Colby Covington, UFC flyweights, Askren, UFC Argentina, and lots more. Delighted to welcome on our next guest here on Off The Ball MMA on offtheball.com. Coming off an absolutely superb, and I think the word you use in Afrikaans is lekker, performance at UFC Fight Night at 138, Ozdemir versus Smith against Edwards. It is the magic man, Don Madge. Don, first of all, I do appreciate the time. I know you're over in California working with Chris Cyborg. How are you, my friend? Great to have you on.
Hey, man, thank you very much for having me. I'm getting on just well, just good. Really, I'm still buzzing off my win 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, listen, talk to me about that, Don. That was, for me, and I've obviously been, you know, following your career a little bit, and, you know, back in the UFC days, yeah, the fights against Leon Meinhardt, those wars in the UFC. Talk to me about what exactly you felt on fight night, implementing such an impressive performance and such an impressive outing on your UFC debut as well.
You know, everyone always asks me like what it felt like, and you know, when you've been fighting as long as I have to get to the big stage, and for me it was just like, you know, I was home, so I felt really, really, really good, really confident going into the fight. I knew that I knew that I would break him. You know, I knew I'd eventually get through, land my shots, and put him away. But I just felt really, really comfortable. I felt really at home there.
Talk to me about that. What is your mindset? Are you one of these guys that's, you know, you're cool, you're calm, collected going out, or are you a guy who's, you know, you need a little bit pent up aggression? What is the mindset when you're walking out?
It's different for each fight, you know. It depends on a lot of things: the weight cut, the camp. Sometimes if I don't like the guy, I'm a little more pissed off than normal. But usually, I just go in there and I'm excited. You know, I love to feed off the crowd energy. So if the crowd's going crazy, I'm going crazy. If the crowd's a little bit more quiet, then I'm usually a little more quiet. And I try to just like ride the energy that's in the arena. You know, I don't need to fight angry. I get myself pumped up because I just love to perform.
Talk to me about that night. What were your emotions like that night? I'm fighting. Were you cool? Were you calm? Were you collected?
Man, I was just happy. I was just happy to be there. I was excited to finally get a chance to display my skills on the biggest stage in MMA. You know, for years, like you said, I've been fighting at the UFC. I've been fighting at smaller shows and stuff, and just been waiting for my opportunity to show the world like exactly what I can do. And so when I was walking out there and I was getting my chance, you know, I was happy, man.
Was that the perfect debut? Could you ask for any more? You know, we saw a little bit of your ground game. Obviously, we know your stand-up skills, your Muay Thai skills. But to show a little bit in the ground as well, that armbar was tight, man. You know, was that the perfect sort of debut? You got to show a little bit of all your repertoire, your skills?
I mean, I think so. I would have liked to show off a little bit of my wrestling too, you know, but I mean, I didn't really get a chance to. But, you know, in terms of debuts, I don't think I could ask for a better one. You know, what a better way to debut than to get a second-round knockout of the match, you know what I mean?
Definitely, was absolutely phenomenal. You've lived in Thailand as well for 4 years, Don. You're a guy, and I think your quote is a sort of a personal thing to you. You know, you like to be tested and put outside your comfort zone. It makes you a better person. Your story in Thailand is quite phenomenal and amazing. You were a guy who's lived there for 4 years. You literally had to fight for money for food. Talk to me about that experience and how that makes how that has prepared you as a mixed martial artist.
Yeah, I mean, Thailand was a sort of pivotal point in my life. It really helped me grow as not just as a fighter, but as like a person. You know, I had to. Mm-hmm. I had to go away from home to like a completely different culture, a completely different world. I couldn't speak the language. I had to basically learn how to speak, and And like you said, I had to fight for money. I had to fight to survive. You know, when I got there, I was a little kid and I had no concept of money or money management or anything. So I pushed that away in the first like 2 weeks, and then I was like, oh well, I'm gonna have to live like a Thai, you know, and fight every weekend, which I basically did.
Wow, that's absolutely phenomenal. Phenomenal story. The skills, obviously, Muay Thai, and you know, adjusting that skill set to mixed martial arts is very, very different in terms of stand-up. How have you been able to sort of piece everything together over the last few years? Because, you know, from me watching you in those the Leon Meinhardt fights, which you lost, and they were phenomenal fights, phenomenal wars. You're a very, very different fighter now to what you were then. Is that Thailand? Is that what that has done for you?
Yeah, I mean, when I fought Leon, you know, I was pretty much fresh out of Thailand. Like, I'd been training MMA for maybe 6 months to a year, and I was fighting a guy with like 20 professional fights. It was my second fight, second ever MMA fight. I never did any amateur MMA fights. I went straight to the professional ranks. So I was just fighting the only way I knew how to fight, which was, you know, Thai style, plant your feet and bang it out. You know, throughout my MMA career, I've worked a lot of my boxing, a lot of my footwork, a lot of angles, a lot of movements. And I think taking my Thai style and taking what I'm proficient in, like powerful kicks, strong clinch game, elbows, knees in the clinch, and then taking the boxing and the footwork.
That's what really impressed me with you.
Style.
Was the footwork really impressed me from a guy who's a Thai style? You were, you know, cutting your angles a lot more than a traditional Muay Thai fighter would be.
Yeah, I mean, that was something that something I've always worked on, but it was something I specifically worked on with this fight. You know, keeping my lead foot on the outside of his lead foot, because he has a big right hand, making sure that I'm slipping off to the left so that he doesn't land that straight cross that he throws. Things like that, we were working throughout camp, you know, and I've been working on throughout my career, making sure that my feet are always moving, you know, I'm never planting and giving it. Just because I can take a good shot doesn't mean I should be just giving you a good shot, right?
Yeah, definitely. It was a fantastic performance. Are you a guy then, obviously, you like being outside your comfort zone? Do you feel as though you thrive outside your comfort zone?
Sorry?
Do you feel as though you thrive outside of your comfort zone, being outside of your comfort zone?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I've always said that, you know, the bigger the moment, the bigger the performance. So whenever I get an opponent or an evening where the odds are all stacked against me, that's usually where I have my best performances. And I always try to make myself work right at the edge of my comfort zone, because you know that's you never improve if you're just staying doing the same things that you're used to doing, you know. So even in camp, I try to put myself in positions or do specific drills that I'm not good at, that I'm not comfortable with, that I actually get like anxiety going to training. I'm like, fuck, I'm gonna have to be on mounts and underneath this fucking middleweight that's gonna grind upon my head, and I'm and like stressing going to training, but the results are what I'm after, you know. And I'm always trying to learn. I'm always trying to get better. Like that's like my life, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'll ask you about, obviously, you're over Chris Cyborg. I'll ask you about that in a moment. You got the 50K for the performance, and you know, we've obviously talked about it. It's a fantastic performance, especially for a guy who's making his debut. I believe you're going to help out your parents. Have you seen that 50K yet? And what exactly are you going to do with your folks with that?
You know, I haven't received the 50K just yet. I'm sure they have to do a few things on the back end there before I get it. But I mean, like I said after the fight, you know, it's all good and well to have 50K and blow it and then be a baller and stuff. But you know, there's things that matter more in life, and I think being able to help my mom, who's helped me my whole life, it's something that I definitely want to do. Give back, you know. Try and give back as much as I can.
Definitely, no, fair play to you. That's it's a phenomenal gesture. Do you feel as though, now, Don? Obviously, we've seen guys like you know, Gart McClellan in the UFC from South Africa. We've seen you know, numerous Ruan Potts, another guy more recently in the UFC. Do you feel as though you are the poster boy now for South African mixed martial arts?
Without taking anything away from those two guys, you know, they were the first generation of South African fighters. They were the first generation of guys that got their shots, the first generation of guys that made a name for themselves in MMA. I believe I'm the second generation. I'm the new generation. So, you know, they sort of paved the way for South African MMA in terms of getting us into the UFC, getting our names out there. But I do believe that I'm the guy that's going to make real waves in the UFC, and I believe I can be I'll be the UFC lightweight champion within 2-3 years.
You're really aiming that high, because I know you've been. I think maybe people don't realize how long you've been around on the scene. Obviously, your Thai background and mixed martial arts in 2011. Is this basically going to be an explosion from Don Madge over the next year or two, as you seem to think so? Are we really going to see a guy climb up the ranks within 2019 and get maybe even up towards a title shot in 2020?
I mean, that's the plan. You know, I'm not here for a long time. You know, I'm here for a good time. So I've been around for a long enough time already. So I'm trying to get in there and make as many waves as I can. And I'm looking for the names, the big names. You know, I want to put on shows, and I want to show that I'm better than all these guys.
Don, do you feel as though you've reached your peak yet, or are you a bit away from your peak?
No, I feel like I'm only just starting to hit my stride now as an MMA fighter. You know, even my coach and I, we only just sort of figured out now exactly like how things work for me and how things mesh for me on the nights and stuff. So I feel like I'm just starting to hit my stride now, and I reckon in the next 5 years I'm gonna start peaking pretty soon. I mean, I'm turning 28 tomorrow, so I'm still young now. I'm only hitting my athletic prime now.
Brilliant stuff. What did your coach say to you in relation to that performance? How did he grade that performance against T. Edwards?
I mean, I think he knew the results was going to happen the same way that I did. You know, he's one of the guys that I respect the most in MMA. You know, like he's a mastermind. So we worked tirelessly at a game plan and a strategy and fixing little things that we needed to do specifically for T. Edwards. And you know, we knew that if I fought the way that I fight, that the result was going to come the same way.
Definitely, and it certainly did. Tell me about your working with Chris Cyborg, obviously the UFC featherweight champion. How did that come about?
It's actually quite funny. When I was living in Thailand, so I used to live in Bangkok, and then I came back to South Africa and I fought a professional K-1 fight. And one of the managers that was the general manager at the time for Tiger Muay Thai was sitting watching my fight, and he came up to me and offered me a full like sponsorship to go and train at Tiger Muay Thai and, you know, get accommodated and fed and all that stuff, and they would promote me. And so while I was there, I met a guy named Ray Albee, who was the jiu-jitsu instructor at the time. And we developed a little friendship. And years down the line, you know, just before I came out here the last time to work with Chris for Holly Holm, he contacted me and said, "Hey, man, we need a tall southpaw striker with a lot of experience." And I was like, "Well, I'm available." You know, I've had a few fights. And then they flew me out for the last camp, and
gone from there.
I guess I left a good mark, so they brought me out here again. You know, Chris is an amazing person, a great athlete, and I'm really like lucky to be here with him.
Yeah, Jason Perillo, obviously you're working with as well in terms of stand-up striking.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had any actual work with Jason yet. It's mainly, you know, for Chris, but I mean, the last time I was here, I got to do some rounds with RDA. I'm training with Cobrini and Ale. You know, the amount of guys that you get to work with on a daily basis when you're out here in California, because it's the mecca of MMA.
Yeah, of course.
It's crazy. You know, I see a bunch of different guys all the time. I'm running with like world champion black belts on a daily basis. So it's really cool to be out here.
Definitely. I believe you're going to take the rest of the year off you know, work with Chris for her fight and sit out the rest of the last month and a half of the year. You're going to have a little rest, a little break?
Yeah, I mean, I never really rest. I'm not training.
Yeah.
I'm always training. So I'm still training. I mean, I'm doing all the sessions that she does in prep for her fight. So I'm basically in fight camp with her.
Yeah.
But in terms of me getting myself into shape, you know, this year was rough in my body. You know, I broke my ribs.
Yeah.
You know, I was supposed to fight in Liverpool. I broke my ribs three right. weeks out. And then I was just, you know, 10-week recovery. And then I got multiple cuts in this last camp. And, like, my body just needs to...
I heard you to super glue your eyebrow back together. Is that correct?
So about 4 weeks before the fight, I got a headbutt and I split my brow. That required 10 stitches. But like literally 10 days before the fight, I got another cut on my forehead. And I was like, well, I can't get stitches for that. So I just super glued it and I managed to hold up.
Definitely. Listen, you've had a little bit of time to sort of look on at the division and look on at some of the names. Is there a name that you see next year that you're going to be potentially throwing down with? Is there a name you like a matchup there?
You know, it's tough to say. You know, it also depends on which card we're going to try and aim for. But I would like to fight with David Tamer. You know, that we were scheduled to fight in May in Liverpool, and obviously I got injured. I know he's probably in the top 15 right now. You know, I think that would be an exciting fight. He's a Thai striker. I'm a Thai striker. I think we could put on a hell of a show. You know,
definitely, I'd 100% watch that fight. That's one I think a lot of the fans would be also interested in watching as well. That's a cracking fight. When do you want to get back in there? March.
I'm aiming for March, April. I mean, UFC London would be a great one.
Definitely.
It all just depends on when I get back from California and when I can get back into training full time.
Definitely, I'm sure the European fans would like to see the Magic Man in action on this side of the pond. Definitely, Don. Listen,
I would love to perform for the European fans. 100%.
Definitely, Don. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Looking forward to. I'm sure we'll chat again in the coming months and years. Really excited to see your career pan out. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Do appreciate the time.
Thank you very much for having me, man.
And that was Don Madge. Big thanks to Don Madge. Lekka brew, as they like to say in Afrikaans in South Africa. I'm multilingual, Simon. Phenomenal performance.
You barely speak English.
Phenomenal performance from Don Madge at UFC Moncton. And a guy, listen, watch out for this guy. He's been following him a long, long time in his career. Phenomenal improvements over the years. And that was really a debut for me, Simon, that you don't see an awful lot better than that in the UFC in terms of complete all-round game and devastating knockout power. I think we knew he had the knockout power, but the ground game was so impressive as well with the armbar. A guy who's learned his trade in Thailand. Phenomenal and really, really interesting story in terms of what he's done and how the journey has really panned out for Don Madge. Went over to Thailand, he said there. He literally had to, you know, fight to eat effectively is what he was saying. Phenomenal stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's backstories like that make the sport so much better. You realise how people struggle to...
The dedication.
To get to the UFC. And then when they get to the UFC, they're only starting then. And what he's been through, is it like 4 years in Thailand? And now he's over in the States working with Chris Cyborg. And, you know, what a performance to announce himself on the international scene and kind of to burst the MMA cult and you know, really kind of get into the groove now. And he's saying there he's still a year or two off his prime, but still wants to make a proper crack at the lightweights.
In the next 2 years?
Yeah, I can't. It's like, it's such a stacked division. Mm. It's going to be really difficult to get into position.
I think a performance like that, yeah, you know, it's obviously going to put the eyes of the world. I think there was a lot of media hype maybe going in amongst certain guys. And let's be honest, he was a 4-1 underdog on him, which I couldn't understand in that fight against Tay Edwards, who was obviously another one from Dana White's contender series. But a phenomenal performance. I'm very, very excited to see where Don goes from here. I think, yeah, listen, there's no rush with these guys. You know, you can UFC Sean Shelby and Mick Maynard should be very, very careful about how the way they match up this kid. Slow progression. It's a marathon, not a sprint, as they say. And I think I'd like to see the UFC go a slower path with this guy, promote him, sell him, have him a fight in Europe, like he said, which he wants to do. That would be absolutely fantastic to have him obviously make his debut in the Canada, not the US, and then come back over here this side of the pond, and then maybe back over to the US. And that's sort of what they did with Darren Till, you know, have a regional card to suit his skill set and, you know, promote his fan base. I think the UFC have struggled really in terms of promoting fighters over the years, and I'd like to see them be a little more sensible with their push with Don Madge.
Yeah, well, I mean, not to be going back to Conor McGregor every time we talk, but like, he had a phenomenal win in his debut out in Sweden.
Yeah.
And look how long it took him to get to the title, and he did it pretty quickly, and it was still nearly 2 years, you know. So I think for Dom to be, you know, looking at a lightweight title next year, it would be a bit too soon.
Yeah, no, I agree, and you know, I don't think I think it's a long way off, obviously. But he's a guy that I think you should really keep your eyes on, because if you look at his career and the progression he's made, it's massive leaps and bounds in terms of his fighting ability as well. He was a guy, if you can watch back those Meinhardt fights, they were phenomenal wars, EFC classics. But even his striking skills back then, he was very much, you know, Muay Thai in your face, walking straight up in, and there was no real sort of, quality jinking footwork that we've seen in that last fight where he's cutting angles and awesome bits. So really, really, really massive progressions and leaps and bounds and strides in his career. Funny story how I came across him. I'm good pals with Quinn Rue. I meant to say it to him when we were on, and one of Quinn's friends was over. This is a few years ago. And he actually told me about Don Madge, and that's how I got on to watching Don Madge. He goes, watch out for these South African guy, bro. And I did. I followed up on it. Quinn Rue, Irish and Connacht player. So that's the interesting story from that one there. But phenomenal talent. Do appreciate Don stopping by on the show this week, over there training with Chris Cyborg ahead of her fight against Amanda Nunes this December on that New Year's Eve weekend card. What is it? The 28th, 29th, whatever it is. Anyway.
You've got the computer in front of you.
I do indeed have the computer in front of me. Okay, I want to move it on a little bit. News this week, reports this week that Henry Cejudo is set to face TJ Dillashaw for the UFC flyweight title. I think that's the real thing that took everyone by storm. We've also had the news this week that Shorty Torres, one of the best up-and-coming flyweights in the UFC, has been released from his contract. Nothing confirmed from Dana White yet, but it looks like they're going to disband the UFC flyweight division. I think it's a disgraceful decision from the UFC. I'm not afraid to say it. I'm disgusted. I think it's a shame on you for that one. Obviously, we had Ian McCall on last week. For me, I do think ONE FC are going to probably end up getting this whole division. But what is the story with the... I'm totally baffled by this decision or this report that's come out from obviously reputable sources in the world of mixed martial arts that it's going to be for the flyweight title. The only thing I can see with this is, and only good that comes out of it, is if TJ Dillashaw wins. He can call himself a two-weight world champion. Is it getting rid of the flyweights then? What's the story? What's going on? Is it going to be the last ever flyweight fight? That's what it looks to me, and I think the UFC are hoping TJ wins it so they can go double champ.
Scrapping the flyweight division is a shame. But
it's a shambles.
It's a business at the end of the day, and like, the flyweights weren't drawn in the numbers, and it's hard to say that because you like so many of their fighters, but if you're trading off Demetrius Johnson, who's possibly the greatest fighter of all time now, to a rival championship in Asia, to get one of their fighters in who's been retired for a year. The writing was on the wall. We talked about it for a couple of weeks now. So I would have thought the fight to make it after they're doing was bring Cejudo up and fight for the bantamweight title. And they just go, look, we're disbanding the lightweight title. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked out.
But if Dillashaw wins, does it put more stock in his pocket if he's a two-weight world champion?
I don't know what it does. It's a bad one. It's really odd.
TJ's ego getting in the way, maybe it's the only, you know, agreement. And plus, I think we're missing out in a better fight. I think both guys do cut an awful lot of weight. Henry Cejudo struggles to get to 125. I'm not even sure TJ can get to 125, if I'm honest. He's, you know, it's a tough cut for him to get to 135.
Yeah.
And I think we would have seen a better fight at 135 pounds. It's just absolutely baffling. Until we get some answers and confirmation from Dana White, it really is. It's a really, really strange odd one from the UFC here.
Like, you look at some of the fights they put together or the ideas they have, and they can chart it this way or that way. It is baffling. I just don't know what to...
I think it's stock in TJ's pocket.
Does TJ really have that much stock? I mean, don't get me wrong, he's a fantastic fighter.
But it puts more stock in his pocket if he can call himself a two-weight world champion.
But why? For what reason?
Because he'd be a two-weight world champion.
No, I understand, but why are they bound to his...
I don't know.
If Cejudo fights at bantamweight, he's a two-weight world champion. He gives him more stock.
Because Dana's come out and said, and he hasn't given an awful lot away in what's happening with the flyweight. Shorty Torres came out and officially confirmed his release from the UFC. which is, you know, clearly if a guy like Shorty Torres is gone, the division is gone. He came out and said on Twitter, I'm the first to be let go. I didn't get to finish my UFC contract with two fights left because they're cutting most of my division and not giving someone else a chance to bump up and prove ourselves like myself. So now it's time to move on to bigger and better things. Good luck, small guys. That was the official line from Shorty Torres. You know, it's terrible for a guy like that to, you know, just starting off his UFC career, two really impressive performances, and then he's shoveled out. And listen, let's just hope all these guys do get a home, and that home is one championship, because I think we need to have all these guys together and create a really good division for the smaller guys. If they're going to fight somewhere, they may as well all be in the same place. Like Ian McCall said back in the day when that Tachi Palace fighting championship, that was a great line actually from Ian last week. I became the best in the world in a car park in Central California. What a line from Ian McCall.
You've been working on your accents this week, haven't you? The three you've dropped already.
But listen, it is a shame. It's very odd. I think we'll just have to wait maybe till next week to comment further. It's a sticky situation. It's messy, and it hasn't been handled great again by the UFC, in my opinion. And I think, you know, Dana could do a little bit more in terms of being honest with the media and things like that, because we need to sort of really know what's going on here with this situation, because it's a royal pain in the backside, Simon.
Royally, yes.
It is indeed. Okay, let's get to the next one. This is pretty explosive. I caught up with
a doozy.
It is indeed. I caught up with Colby Covington, the UFC interim welterweight champion, to talk about, listen, a range of issues. Ben Askren's arrival in the division. Also, Khabib versus McGregor. He said he wants a fight with either of those next year after he unifies the world title against Tyron Woodley. He reckons that fight's going to be around March, April, around that time. Super Bowl weekend, apparently, he's a non-runner. The UFC are doing a pay-per-view in Australia that weekend this year. So loads of heat from Colby Covington. We'll be back to look forward to UFC Argentina Buenos Aires this weekend. So do check it out. We'll be back with that in a few minutes' time. Delighted to welcome on the show, on the new show for the very first time, all the way down there in Florida. I'm pretty jealous now talking to this man and telling me about the sun and the women and everything that's going on down there in Florida. It is UFC welterweight interim champion, Mr. Colby Covington. Colby, first of all, my friend, great to have you on. As always, great to speak to you. How are you?
Oh, great. Thanks for having me on, my man. It's always a pleasure. I love talking to a great mind like yourself.
A great mind. Appreciate the compliment, Colby. Colby, listen to me, mate. What's been going on with you? Obviously, training hard, you know, waiting for a date with Mr. Tyron Woodley. What's the situation with you at the moment?
The same situation, you know, that I'm always in. You know, I'm getting better every day. I get richer every day I wake up. You know, just life is good. I'm living the American dream. I'm proud to be American, and I'm just proud for everything that America stands for and to be a champion. I'm the champion of the American people, so I conduct myself like a true champion.
I saw that recently as well. I listened to an interview, I think the Submission Radio guys in Australia and other boys as well. You said that you're in constant contact with the Trumps since being in the White House. Can you fill us in a little bit on that?
Yeah, we were in good contact. They wanted to come watch the fight in New York. I was kind of disappointed that, you know, I didn't get the chance to go make the Garden great again, and they ended up making D.C. on there. But, you know, they wanted to come right down the street because the Garden in New York is right down the street from them in the Oval Office in the White House. So, you know, but I keep in touch with Donald Trump Jr. And, you know, Donald Trump is excited to see my next fight. I can tell you that. He's excited. He knows who America's champ is, the real champ. That's me, not that paper champ like Tyquil Woodley. So, you know, I'm just excited for what the future holds, and just representing the Trump family and all of MAGA. You know, it's the red wave now. Yeah. You can't stop us. All we do is win. All these other liberals, these soy boys that are addicted to, you know, drugs, cocaine, all these other things, all we're addicted to is winning.
Yeah, no, certainly. Are they going to be in attendance? Do they want to come and sit cage side and see your fight? You know, maybe Donald Trump Jr. or something like that. Would they be allowed?
Yeah, absolutely. Donald Trump Jr. will be there for sure. I'm going to get him a front row ticket. But, you know, the Don, you know, Donald Trump, you know, the senior, you know, the man, the myth, the legend, you know, he's a little nervous about going to sporting events. And, you know, rightfully so. I would be, too, in his position. He's the president of the United States. He has a target on his back. So, you know, it just doesn't make sense to put him in a vulnerable situation in a hostile crowd. You know, you just you don't know what could happen. Maybe, you know, some weird things go on. So, you know, he'll be at home, but I guarantee he will have, you know, front and center screen right in front of his face, and he will be watching America's champ, Colby Chaos Covington, dethrone Tyquil, the liberal soy boy Woodley.
I want to ask you about that. You know, obviously that fight was supposed to happen. I had Duke Rufus on the show, Tyron's coach, a number of weeks ago. And Duke was saying that was the date, obviously, until Tyron got injured. There was talk of Nick Diaz as well. Was that close?
Yeah. Sorry, I lost you for a second. But, yeah, Nick Diaz was a proposed fight in the beginning. That was the first fight that I was actually offered and they were talking about. But, you know, he put his tail between his legs and he got scared when he realized that a real fighter was ready to go. You know, I think the thing with the Diazes these days, you know, especially Nick, is, you know, he chats more than he fights. You know, he hasn't won a fight in, what, 4 years or something like that against who knows who. And I mean, he's just not active. He's just using his mouth to get promotion and get some social media followers. He's not here to make the UFC great again like myself. He's not here to be a real fighter and fight, you know, a couple times a year. He's washed up. His time is come and gone. So, you know, I'm over the guest now. It's solely focused on Tyron Woodley. That's the only person I care about. I'm going to end his career, and then I'm on to bigger and better things.
Would you entertain, you know, obviously any other fights? Obviously, you said you were going to, you know, there was talk of that happening. Is there anyone else you'd get in there? Whether you're going to sit and wait maybe till Super Bowl weekend, as you said there, for Tyron Woodley?
Yeah, no. At this point, you know, this is unfinished business. We have business to settle. You know, I'm going to wait as long as he takes. You know, as long as he wants to keep faking these injuries, you know, it's funny how he came up with the injury before the Garden in New York all of a sudden, you know, but right after his fight with the Doughboy, the overhyped, you know, he said at the press conference, oh, I'm healthy, I'm good to go, I can fight Colby in the Garden. So it's real funny, a couple weeks later, all of a sudden he's injured, you know, but, you know, it's fake news, you know, he's just trying to negotiate and he didn't get the money he wanted. But, you know, there's been a couple times now that he's ducked me now, he ducked me in New York, he ducked me last year in Vegas. He said his shoulder was hurting or something like that. So, you know, the excuses are running out. You know, it's just a matter of time until they just completely, you know, he just vanishes from the sport and, you know, stripped of everything he's ever worked for. But, you know, I'll tell you what, he gets in that octagon with me, I'm going to take everything he worked for and I'm going to take my belt. You know, I'm going to defend my belt and, you know, we'll never ever hear that name again, Tyquil Woodley.
Does it concern you that, you know, the fight has sort of fallen out a few times? There's been, you know, you got injured, obviously. And, you know, for me, I thought it was ridiculous that, you know, the UFC were offering you the fight in such short notice, especially after your tough fight that you had. Do you get this maybe feeling that maybe it's destined never to happen? Does that cross your mind?
To be honest, you know, that has crossed my mind a couple times, but, you know, I have faith. You know, I have faith in the system and everything that it's going to happen. You know, I built this fight. I built this fight for years, you know, since the first time we trained together now at American Top Team when I was whooping him at his ass in training. That's when this fight was started. That's when the hooks were put in. But, you know, since my long UFC winning run that I'm on right now, I've been calling him out every step of the way, you know, saying he gets tired at home just watching it. And, you know, there's no doubt about it that he has been ducking me and he's ran from me. So, you know, I don't know if it's going to ever happen, but, you know, I got to have faith and I got to believe that it's going to happen because I want to be the one to take everything he worked for. Everything he's worked for, I want him to remember me the rest of his life. When he has to go home to his kids at night, I want his kids to remind him that Colby Covington gave him the worst ass whooping of his career and sent him into retirement.
Talk to me about the injuries. You know, I think I was on with you maybe a year ago and you were very stuffed up with the sinuses. And I know you've had an operation since. You've had the flu. You've had a lot of mucus, I think, going into your chest and your lungs. How is the sinus injury now? Is it all healed up? Is everything all good?
Yeah, it's almost all healed up now. You know, the surgery was very important for me before. You know, I couldn't breathe when I was out of my nose. So, you know, I was mouth breathing, and as a fighter, that's terrible. You don't want to mouth breathe. You know, that's how you get your jaw broken. So, you know, now the mucus is starting to clear up. We've cleared a lot out with the surgery, and, you know, I'm on the road to 100% recovery. Unlike, you know, my last couple fights, I haven't been at my best. I haven't been at 100%. It's 100%, and it's a matter of time until I end back with my career.
I also want to ask you, Colby, about, you know, you made some comments about Habib Nurmagomedov, the whole incident, UFC 229. Just your thoughts on that off the bat.
He's a sheep lover, let's be honest. I mean, he set the sport back 20 years by acting like a filthy animal, jumping out of the cage, you know, putting innocent, endangered people's lives on the line? Like, come on, man. These people pay good money to come see these fights, man. You can't be jumping in the crowd like an animal. I thought you were supposed to be so religious and respectful and this and that, you know? I can't condone those type of actions, you know, because what are you mad at? Are you mad at Conor, the guy that just made you the most amount of money you're ever going to make in your career? You're not ever going to be able to fight 10 more fights that are going to add to that type of money you made versus Conor. So you should be thanking him and kissing his feet, not acting like a filthy animal. So, you know, my thoughts about Khabib Nurmagomedov actually got me banned and in Twitter jail, Niall.
So, security. I don't know if you where's the security, Khabib? Your lights have just gone off there.
Yeah, I know, right? So my thoughts on Khabib actually got me in Twitter jail. You know, I said, you know, I spoke my mind, but I didn't know that Twitter could ban you for free speech. Wow. For, you know, trying to say some fighting words to build a fight. I called, you know, Khabib what I thought he was. He's a sheep. Don't you see that thing he's walking around on his head with? That's his girlfriend.
I want to ask you about that, the fight words, right? You often talk about that, and we've had this conversation in the past, you know, in terms of guys taking things too seriously in the build-up to a fight and not really understanding the fight promotion and things like that. Do you think this was very much the case at UFC 229 with Khabib?
Yeah, very much the case. You know, I mean, Conor's in there giving him his innocence, you know, saying it's just business. You know, he should understand it, you know, and that guy just made you more money you're going to ever make. So, you know, some of these guys, they're so sensitive, man. That's what it is now. These guys are sensitive little snowflakes. And it's just, it's a sad world we live in. All these guys want safe spaces these days. It's a fucking joke.
It's not something you'd entertain in the future. I sort of get the impression that you might be sort of, you know, trying to get underneath Khabib's skin here, cause a bit of beef for a future date with Khabib. There's a lot of talk. I know Dana's played it down, but it seems to keep coming back up. Obviously, Dustin Poirier said it, you know, Nate Diaz, you know, Ben Askren now about the 165-pound division. Is this something that you'd entertain maybe in the future yourself and Khabib? Because I think, you know, in terms of a fight that would sell extremely well, it would be you versus Khabib.
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy fight, so easy fights always interest me. But, you know, there's a reason he's in a little boys' weight class, and he's fighting 155 lightweight. You know, he's had his troubles with lightweight where, you know, he couldn't make weight. He missed weight a couple times, so he never wanted to come up to welterweight. He never even entertained coming up to welterweight, and I think there's a reason behind that. He has a lot of fear, and he knows that wrestling is not going to work at welterweight, you know. If we're being honest, his level of wrestling probably wouldn't even make the varsity level wrestling team in the USA. So, I mean, that's just my honest.
Honestly, though, jokes aside, do you truly believe that, Commons?
No, I truly believe that. He wouldn't be a varsity level wrestler. Like, I mean, his sambo, I mean, he's got good gas, but all the good wrestlers, you know, that's nothing to us. That's what we have. That's what we've developed since we were little kids, you know, is good gas and good endurance in wrestling. And at lightweight, he's just been able to endurance guys. His technique's not that good. He wouldn't make a college team. No doubt about it. 100% in my mind, he wouldn't make a college wrestling team. So, you know, if he comes up to welterweight, he will get exposed. And I would be the one to expose him. But, you know, I think him and his manager, Ali Abdel, you know, they know better, man. They're looking for good fights for their Khabib, you know, the sheep lover. And, you know, and I don't think any of those fights are entertained at 170.
What do you think about a potential 165-pound division? Does it interest you? Do you think it's something the UFC should do?
Yeah, it definitely interests me because, you know, I already have the belt at 170 right now. To get a second belt at 165, be a double champ, sounds good to me. And then I'm going for triple champ. I'm going for history now. I don't want the champ anymore. It's already been done. Mm. I want the champ. So that's what Colby Chaos Covington's got on the near horizon.
And what weight classes?
Welterweight, lightweight, and middleweight.
Do you think you get a 55 at this stage of your career?
I mean, that I'm saying if they make the 165. Yeah. I don't think I can make 155. I could honestly make 155, but I don't want to kill myself. These guys are going to kill themselves. You know, Khabib's probably a bigger guy than me. He probably weighs more than me walking around every day, but I'm not going to kill myself to get down there. I believe in my health and I want my health to hold me up long term. So, you know, and I'm not afraid to fight, man. These guys are afraid to fight. They think cutting all this weight is going to give them a significant fighting advantage. That doesn't give me no advantage. I don't care about cutting weight. I don't care if you're a bigger man in there. You don't have a bigger will than me, and you don't have a bigger heart than me.
Ben Askren, I want to get your thoughts on Ben as well. Obviously, he's signed. There's been this, you know, humongous trade between the UFC and ONE FC. You know, Ben's obviously a very, very good wrestler. You know, I do have my reservations personally about Ben. I think, you know, a lot of the guys he's fought aren't up to the level of the guys in the UFC. I think it's good to see him in there, to see him tested, see what he's going to bring to the division. Robbie Lawler looks like first. What are your thoughts on Ben Askren moving into the UFC?
He's a 34-year-old virgin with the Daffy Duck lisp. If I'm being honest, you know, the guy's irrelevant. You know, he's beaten nobody. You know, if you go look at one of his fights versus my teammate Sapo, Sapo was throwing him around like a little rag doll. He was going to TKO finish him, but then Ben had to poke him in the eye.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, so, you know, Askren, you know, he's unproven. He hasn't beat anybody. He's talking a big game, but, you know, you're not backing up your big game talk. So, you know, if he comes over here, wins some fights, which, you know, I don't know if he's going to be able to. But if he does, you know, it's a pretty easy stylistic fight for me. You need to be well-rounded in the UFC these days. One-dimensional fighters do eventually get exposed, and that's what he is, one-dimensional. He's scared to strike. You know, when he takes his guys down, he can't even freaking hurt a fly. He got that Russian guy in mount for five rounds and didn't put a scratch on the guy's face. So, you know, he's got pillow fists. You know, the guy's a joke, man. He literally is scared to strike. Puts his head down like fearful, you know. So, you know, I don't really have much to say about him, but, you know, if he wins a couple fights, it's a pretty easy fight.
Do you envisage that happening down the line? Do you see him winning fights in the UFC and putting a run together?
You know, if they give him the right matchups, I could see that happening. But, you know, I think Robbie Lawler might be that right matchup. You know, a guy that has the most significant strikes to his head in the UFC history, a guy that's, you know, he's been through a lot of wars. You know, he's probably should retire by now. You know, I think RDA kind of finished Lawler's career off last. You know, that five-round beating that RDA put on Lawler, I mean, that was a beating, a mauling. You know, he dropped him a couple times. You know, so, you know, I think the guy should hang it up. But, you know, if they give him the right matchups and the right trajectory, you know, he might make it. But, you know, the thing is, he's kind of capped out. He's not going to make it past what he's a gatekeeper. And he's not going to get any farther than being a gatekeeper to this division. I'm the real champ, and I'm not going anywhere.
What's your main focus now in terms of training? Obviously, you know, we know how good your wrestling and grappling is, and you're very complete there. Is it all about striking and improving that area of your game and that everything else sort of comes naturally to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been training with a new Muay Thai coach. His name's Gregory Choplin. He was a world champion in Muay Thai, a legit Muay Thai champion. Like, I think it was IBJ or IBF or something, a legit Muay Thai world champion. He's from France, and, you know, he lives in Miami now. So I've been going to Miami to train with him for about 2 years straight now. And, you know, we're developing and just putting our whole game together better than I ever thought this could come. You know, just the elbows, the knees off the clinch, you know, the kicks, the, you know, everything, the setups, you know, because that's what it is in the octagon. You have to have fakes. You have to have setups. So, you know, me and my new coach, we've really been working hard on my stand-up. And, you know, soon you're going to see that my stand-up's better than my wrestling. And my wrestling is top level. You don't get any higher level. You know, I could have made the Olympic team if I would have went out for it. You know, I could have done great things in wrestling, but I decided to follow MMA because I just know my skill and I know my heart and my gas tank, and I know this sport was made for me.
Has this year, like, it's a bit of a strange year, I feel, for you, you know, personally sort of looking on. It really hasn't had a lot of fluidity. You know, I feel for you, you would have obviously wanted to get back in there a couple of months ago. It's been sort of stop-start with the whole Tyron Woodley thing. Obviously frustrating. Is 2018 the year where we see Colby Covington, you know, kick on to that next level?
Yeah, 2019. That new gear is going to now. We go into a new gear in 2019. 2018 was all right. You know, it's, you know, we had Woodley ducking me a couple of times, a couple big fights that were maybe going to come together, you know, maybe even the GSP possibility, you know, some big fight opportunities, but they just didn't come to fruition. But, you know, 2019, I'm young. I'm still getting better every single day. And the best is yet to come for me. These guys are old, man. They're, you know, Woodley, he's old, man. He's 36 years old. He's on his way out. I'm on my way up. I'm 30 years young. I'm just at my prime right now. So 2019 is going to be the best year you're ever going to see from me. I'm cleaning out the trash. I'm going to drain the swamp, just like the American president, Donald Trump.
Talk to me about the map. What is the map in 2019? Welterweight title, then what?
The welterweight title, if they do the 65, that title, you know, looking for that big fight against the Khabib, or, you know, maybe even we threaten the little whiskey dick Conor McGregor to come up. Come try for a third belt. Come try for history, little buddy. Come on, you little fucking drunk leprechaun.
What did you think of Conor's performance against Khabib?
It was pathetic. But let's be honest, you know, I knew that from the start. I knew we knew he couldn't wrestle. You know, he was getting taken down by a little midget in Chad Mendes. So, you know, obviously, you know, the high school level wrestler, the sheep lover, Khabib, was going to take him down and maul him. So, you know, Conor, you know, he's done great for himself, though. You can't fucking knock the guy. I mean, he's did the biggest gates, you know, made the most amount of money. He capped out, you know, but he hit his peak. You know, he doesn't go much farther than he's went right now. He's at his peak right now. And I'm just at the bottom. I'm just at the summit. I'm just coming on my way up right now. So, I'm taking over the game. Conor had a good run, but this is Colby Chaos Covington's game now.
Do you really think that, you know, you're the guy that people will want to get in there with to try and make a name off because of, obviously, this year, especially with Donald Trump, everything that's gone down? You've obviously had a lot of haters come your way, but you've obviously had a lot of fans come your way as well. We know what the United States is like at the moment. Is this sort of the year where everyone wants to get a piece of Colby Covington?
Yeah, I mean, as you can see from, you know, last year, everybody was already calling me out. You know, everybody's saying my name now. Everybody wants that fight because they know when they lose to me now, it's the biggest paycheck they ever get to lose to me. So, you know, 2019, it's only going to get bigger. This is only growing. I'm a tree just growing every single day. So 2019, everybody wants a piece and they know I'm the money fight. I'm the guy with the target on my back now. And all I got to say is bring it, motherfuckers. I'm ready.
There you have it. Has there been talks? One final one before we let you go. Do appreciate the time as always, Colby. Has there been talks with Dana White, the UFC, Sean Shelby, all the boys there? Is there something in place? Is that the weekend of the Super Bowl? Is that the talks we're going to see you and Woodley finally throw down?
So, you know, there has been some talks, but, you know, the thing is that Super Bowl weekend, they decided to not go with it this year. So okay. They're going to Australia in February for their pay-per-view. So, you know, I don't think it's not going to happen in Australia, obviously. I'm America's champ, so I got to defend American soil. So, you know, it's just a matter of is it going to happen March 3rd in Vegas or is it going to happen, you know, in January in California? So we'll see what happens. You know, there's only one pay-per-view a month next year in the first quarter. So, you know, we'll see how things play out. But, you know, obviously I'd love to go to Vegas. You know, that's the fight capital of the world. When you fight in Vegas, you know, it's just, there's not a bigger honor than to fight there as a fighter. So, you know, I'm hoping for Vegas. I hope it happens. I'd love to retire Tyquil Woodley and end his career in Vegas. And I'm sure maybe the Trump family would probably love to come down to Vegas and spend some money and do some gambling.
Is it close to being signed off though? Is something, you know, going to get over the line in the next couple of weeks, maybe before Christmas?
Not really. No. We'll see though. I mean, you never know. You can't predict anything or assume anything. It's just, you know, it could happen on a day's notice. Right now it doesn't feel close, but tomorrow it could be done, you know. Yeah. That's how it works in the UFC. So, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, I'm ready whenever. I was born ready for this. You know, all my sinus stuff and my surgery before was behind me. Now I'm healthy. Now I'm ready to defend what's mine. I'm ready to defend my belt. So, you know, we'll see when it gets signed. You know, he's faking injuries. So we got to see when he's done faking injuries with his little thumb. You know, I know he had to get a little Advil and try and get his thumb better. So we'll see when he signs and when he's ready to go.
Colby, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show and speak with you. I do appreciate the time. Looking forward to a big 2019 for you, my friend. Appreciate it.
My man, I'll talk to you soon.
And that was Colby Covington. Listen, I first of all, off the bat, I love talking to Colby Covington. I know probably you'll really? get a bit of heat off that. I think he's, you know, the way he portrays himself, the way he conducts himself, it's to get a reaction, and he gets a reaction. One way or another, people are talking about him. That's all he gives a damn about, is that. And he's done the job very, very well, in my opinion.
Yeah, you can't, I mean, America's a pretty polarised place at the moment, and going to the White House, putting on the old MAGA hat with Donald Trump, you know, it's you're alienating yourself from one set of people, but endearing yourself to another set. So, look, people want to see him win, or people want to see him lose. So.
Really interesting comments, Simon. I know you've only heard little bits of it, and well, most of it you've heard, but the one sort of real interesting thing, like, there was so many little points we take from it. Khabib and, or Conor McGregor, he said next year he'd love to have a big, big fight. He wants to be a three-weight world champion. He said, you know, if the 165 division comes in, he'd love a shot at that, 170 and 185. He's not sure about getting down to 155. But he's really sort of entertaining, more so, I think, Khabib than Conor McGregor. He'd go at both of them there in that interview, said he loved that fight after he unifies the titles. I think the Khabib fight is something the UFC could really, really sell in terms of his relationship. You know, the whole Donald Trump thing against the Russians in Khabib Nurmagomedov. Honestly, though, it's an intriguing sort of contest. The two wrestlers as well.
The mess that was stirred up the last time. I think the last thing the UFC want to do, regardless of call
it. Do you think the UFC will care if there's big bucks on the line?
I don't think
they will. Dana White doesn't care. WMEIMG don't care. It's a fight that could definitely happen, in my opinion. If especially if Colby wins that welterweight title, that's a super fight. I think anyone will watch from International Fight Week.
You ask me, I don't think it's a fight they should push right at the bat. There's too many more interesting fights around, and particularly for the reasons that you're talking about. The was it Rocky IV, Drago?
Why not? No, something down the line. I think he's planting the seeds there already, and what he said in the last couple of weeks, that it's something that really, really does interest.
Well, I mean, we can plant the seeds ourselves. All you have to do is look at the top three in each division and go, who's going up and who's going down.
He said he wouldn't make a collegiate wrestling team in the United States. That's what he said about Khabib Nurmagomedov. I did ask him a rebuttal with that question, saying, come on, you know, all, you know, smart funniness aside. And he said, I truly believe he would not make a college wrestling team. I find that hard to believe, but it's just an interesting fight for me.
I think
the seeds are there, yeah. But listen, what a fight that would be. Two really, really good grapplers, two really, really good strong wrestlers. And
all the nonsense outside the octagon aside, yes, as a fight, it's something you definitely want to see. But like Tyron Woodley still is knocking around.
No, I'm talking about after. He's talking about in 2019, after this unification fight against Tyron Woodley, which is looking likely to happen sometime next year.
Well, who do you have winning between Woodley and Covington?
Well, you'd have to go with Tyron early on, but, that could... I think it's going to be a lot closer fight than people are expecting. You can't write off Colby Covington in that fight. Not 100%. Colby's been very, very impressive, and I don't think he's got a lot of credit for what he's actually done in the octagon. Like that was a phenomenal performance. A lot of people didn't have him even having a chance going into that fight, and he proved everyone wrong again. So,
I would agree, but
I'd have to favour Woodley. I think
Woodley's just a dominant. Like, everyone's gone on about Khabib, I think Woodley's a far more dominant.
Well, champion. I think Woodley's maybe 2-3 fights away from being the GOAT. I generally think that in terms of what he's done in the last 3 years has been unbelievable, how much he's improved.
Yeah.
But listen, Colby's on the way up as well. It's a guy not even hitting his peak yet. A really, really good fight. Askren.
Just to go back to something you were saying there, like the whole 165-pound division thing.
You like this. You're a big fan of this.
I am, but if it's done the right way. I don't want to see 155, 165, 170. I think the 170... No, I'm not saying scrap the 170 division, but just...
You couldn't, it's one of the best.
But I'm saying move the limit up to 175. Yeah. So welterweight is now 175. If you do that, like to make 170, if you make 170, you make 175.
Yeah.
So all the previous records would stand. I think people are worried about expunging the whole welterweight division and starting again. I think if you just go, all right, we're creating a new 165 division, 170 is being moved to 175, all previous records stand. I think people will get on board with that. Obviously, they don't understand as a bit of a switch, but...
The thing about that, you're going to have guys, you know, that extra 5 pounds, things like that, you know, going up, going down. It's messy. I think Dana White's not on board with it yet. I think a lot of the fighters are, like Ben Askren, we've had Diaz, Poirier talk about it. Colby Covington's open to it. I think if they can get everyone on board, yes.
Have you heard any of the fighters?
No, not really. No.
And I have to remember there's kind of a bottleneck of fighters at 155 and 170. Mm. And
I agree with you with that point. I think it would be better if, you know, they pushed up to 175 and even it out, so we're not having saturated divisions too many.
Yeah, and like 10 pounds is enough between my divisions. There's no way it's going to go like boxing. There's no chance. Everyone knows that. Nobody wants to see that. But there's a... Why is it 125, 135, 145, 155, 170, 185? Like, the human genetics, you know, shows that most men are... Or the vast majority of who are in MMA circles are between that 155 and 175.
Well, I think 165 is a perfect weight for a lot of fighters.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting what happens. I think, you know, it'll be over the next year or two if that does come in. I don't see it really coming in anytime in the next sort of 6 to 8 months by the, what Dana White was saying. But obviously a lot of the fighters are 100% up for it.
Well, Dana White said he never had women fighting.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Dana changes his mind 24 hours. He said Conor McGregor probably, you know, never fight in the UFC in Brooklyn. He's cutting a division. All over the next day.
He's cutting a division in the men's now, so there's space there for it. So I think it makes perfect sense.
There is space for it. That's a good point as well. That's another excellent point because there is space for it. Also talk about Ben Askren. He called him some unpleasantries there as well. He doesn't think Ben's up to the job. And, you know, I think there's a valid point on that. I'm not saying Ben's not up to the job. I think that Ben hasn't been tested enough in his career. And I think he mentioned that Santos fight, the Sapo fight, you know, where the IPO came into play. And, you know, I do think there's still a lot of proving for Ben Askren in the UFC. And it's going to be very interesting to see what he does.
That first matchup is something I'm really looking forward to see what they do with.
Yeah.
Are they going to throw him in?
It looks like Robbie Lawler on that card and Henry Cejudo.
Beautiful.
So that's a fight, I think, you know, it's a really, really good test.
Great to see Robbie Lawler back as well.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed his run to the welterweight.
I fear it might be, you know, sort of a bit of a spiral now for Robbie after that one. But obviously a legend of the sport and mixed martial arts.
He's taken what now? Must be over a year off at this stage.
Yeah, yeah.
So he realised that knockout, I need to take some time off. I need to get myself. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Robbie Lawler brings to the table now.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, it's a very good wrestler. Robbie is as well. You know, hard hitting hands. He's been in some absolute wars. That, you know, the Rory McDonald fight, all time UFC classic, best fight I've ever seen live in my life. Incredible scrap. So yeah, it, you know, it is, and I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how Ben Askren handles his UFC debut, and hopefully that fight gets over the line the next couple of weeks. I don't think it's over the line yet.
As we speak, it's not, but I think that's where we're going, yeah.
Definitely. Okay, just going to kick it on a little bit before we get out of here. UFC Argentina goes down this Saturday night. Neil Magny versus Santiago Ponzinibbio. I can never say that name right.
True, yeah, still haven't.
Ricardo Lamas, Darren Elkins. I love that fight. I think that's even better than the main event. It just doesn't appeal to me, this card. It's not got my, you know, heart racing. It's not got the juices flowing at all. Magny, Santiago, you know.
Is it a fight in South America for the sake of a fight in South
America?
Yeah,
I think it is.
Should they have brought Yoya Rodriguez down there?
No, because we saw that fight last night and we wouldn't have seen that otherwise.
Not in the space of a week.
Yeah, I know. I'm joking. I'm taking the mic.
Oh, was it? All right.
Yeah. You know, I'm just not mad in this fight card. I really am, and I don't have an awful lot to say about it. I think Elkins and Lamas will be a better fight than the main event here. And I think, you know, Santiago is obviously a guy who the UFC are obviously trying to promote in his region of South America and Argentina. We've seen the fights, obviously, you know, Neil Magny, a guy who seems to fight every other week. It's not one that gets the juices flowing, in your opinion, either, no?
No, not really, no. Especially after watching last night.
Well, listen, there's not much that's going to be able to surpass last night. I think we're a little bit hungover from last night.
The card last night, when you looked at it, it's kind of going, that's just another UFC card.
But the main event was tasty.
It delivered.
I think the main event was going to be tasty, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah. All right, yeah. But in fairness, Leon Magny, like, he's coming off a couple of good wins, obviously winning as Craig White before that Carlos Condit as well. Then obviously that loss to Rafael Dos Anjos. And obviously, you know, fighting Santiago, hometown boy, as well in Santiago Ponzinibbio. There we are, I said it right. Well done, Niall. A guy who's, you know, on a run, making a push to get inside that top two or three in the division. Not far off a title shot, you know. It's, what, six straight now from coming off that win against Perry, Nelson, Nordin, Taleb. A couple of more big names and he's right up there. Does this give him, you know, validation if he beats Neil Magny? Is Neil Magny the guy that's going to get you over the line for that title shot? I don't think so. I think the UFC are going to be slow with this.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's just a fight for the sake of having a fight, really, isn't it?
I think it is. Yeah, it's a bit of a whack.
As I say in chess, it's like a holding move.
Yeah, it is. It's a whack. It's sort of a, you know, I don't really see where it puts him, even with a win in this fight. It's a really odd card. It probably is just for the sake. But Darren Elkins, Lamas, I really do like this fight. Darren Elkins, guy obviously always brings it. His winning streak came to an end last time out against Alexander Volkanovski in that fight where, you know, it was a pretty one-sided fight there at UFC Fight Night back in July. He's going up against Ricardo Lamas. It's been a while, I think. When was the last time Ricardo was in against Mirsad Bektic at UFC 225? split decision back in June. He's coming off two losses. That's a phenomenal fight, I think, to watch in the card. Two guys with no really good pedigree. And I think any fight Darren Elkins is in is going to be a bloody war of attrition. And Ricardo Lamas has been in his fair few fights as well.
Lamas, he brings it, you know.
Good wrestling skills, good stand-up skills.
You'd have to say, like, this is kind of another last chance soon. If he loses this, he's really out of the featherweight picture.
He is. I agree with you. I think
he needs to get this. Or, and like, if he goes up to lightweight,
he's a little bit undersized for lightweight as well.
Get a ticket and stand in line. So he really needs to win this one now to get back in title contention.
Totally agree with you. Absolutely, totally agree with you. And it's interesting for me as well. Elkins, see how he bounces back. You know, he was on such a good roll. The wins against Johnson, Bermudez, Mirsad Bektic, that unbelievable fight where he came back and won that. He was getting smashed the whole fight, came back, got the finish, won that. It's going to be interesting to see how he bounces back from that sort of momentum killer against Volkanovski. So really, really interesting fight for me. I'm going to have to go ahead and pick Ricardo Lamas. I think Lamas is going to be able to grind him out in this one for me. Main event, I think Santiago finishes that fight. I think his stand-up skills are going to be a little bit too much for Neil Magny.
This is an odd one, I agree with you. I agree with you on both counts.
Excellent stuff.
Crack down the date.
Not an awful lot of the else to really talk about in the card. Cynthia Gavilo is back in there as well. Alexander Pantoja, if you remember Alexander, he defeated Neil Seary in Seary's final fight at UFC Glasgow. A really, really high prospect in the flyweight division. I don't know how long he'll be around for after this fight against Ulka Sasaki, Japanese fighter. And that's a really, really good fight to watch out for there. Simon, it's nearly time to get out of here this week. Anything else you wanna bring up before we get out of here? It's been a pretty crazy week after last night and that fight card. 25 years of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. But we've seen another 25?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, look at it.
Simon just put the kiss of death on the UFC. Haven't you?
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
It's all over.
It is.
Well, I mean, I was thinking back, you look back at some of the great fights.
Any sort of memories, any favourite fights over the first quarter of a decade? Or quarter of a century, quarter of a decade. So I can't add, sorry.
You look back at Frankie Edgar's clashes with Gray Maynard.
Ah, wars.
He bounced around the ring and somehow...
13 times he was down in that fight.
That would be called off like 3 or 4 times now.
Yeah, I remember speaking to Mark Henry about that. Mark said he was the closest he ever was to throwing in tail in a fight. And it's a funny story actually here. Mark was telling me that Ricardo Almeida actually grabbed the tail from behind his head.
Right.
So that's why he didn't throw the tail in against Edson Barbosa.
All right.
When Barbosa fought Tony Ferguson in that fight. It was an interesting tough fight. Yeah, no, I love those few fights. They were absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Gray Maynard and Edgar. And there's been so many memories and different things that have gone over the years. And I think last night was just so fitting.
Yeah, well, another one I want to bring up in relation to last night was I know you mentioned earlier, was Rory MacDonald and Robbie Lawler, their first fight, or their second fight.
What a fight.
That was one of McGregor's. Was that the McGregor-Mendez?
Yeah, it was. UFC 189.
Yeah, and I remember watching it going, oh, that's brilliant. And then it's like, oh, wait, McGregor's fighting next.
Yeah.
It was just that good. It was.
I remember I was in Vegas for the cover of it and sitting there cage side and, you know, getting texts from lads back home. Oh, my God, did you just watch that fight?
Yeah.
It was one of those where, you know, everyone was tuning in for Conor, but it actually sort of, in some ways, stole the show because it was just such a war of attrition. An absolutely phenomenal fight, something I'll never, ever forget. I think it's the best fight I've ever seen in person and one that will definitely go to the grave with me.
Yeah, it sticks out in my head as any time, especially with fight.
Number one for me.
Might say something else, but it's definitely one that popped into my head first.
Number one for me. Are we looking at knockouts of the year last night? Is that knockout of the year? I think it has to be, doesn't it?
I can't think about it. Like, in any sport, that's knockout of the year. Yeah. It was just, if that happened in the middle of the fight, it's knockout of the year. The fact that there's 1 second to go and he's losing, and if your man even gets up and beats the 10 count or whatever counter, like, he's able to get up or stagger up. Like, it's just insane. It was so good.
So good. If you haven't seen it, guys, go back and check that out. Absolutely phenomenal stuff. Okay, we're going to get out of here. You can subscribe to the channel on YouTube. youtube.com/offtheball, and there's playlist there, Off the Brawl MMA, and also you can catch the show on podcast. It will be up on the website. What is the password on the website? offtheball.com/podcast. You'll get it there. I think it's in highlight section of the podcast, so do look that up. So big thanks obviously to Don Madge, big thanks to Colby Coven for stopping by Big thanks to you guys for checking out the show. So from Simon McGuire and Niall McGrath, it is good luck and good night. Thanks, guys.